The House will come to order. The flag salute will be led by Representative Boone.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opening ceremonies will be presented by Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, everyone. Okay, let's try one more. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Okay, that's good. It's very good. I just want to share three quotes with you this morning, and then I'd like to take a little bit of time out to start out with prayer this morning as well for this session. How many of you remember Bob Richards? He was the first character that was on the Wheaties box. Was a pole vaulter. You can go ahead and raise your hands. Let's see. Okay, that shows your age. Good. You remember as well, Mr. Speaker? Good. Anyways, this is a quote that he had. Life does not determine a champion. A champion determines life. And another quote from an Olympian, Dave Johnson, back in 1992. He was a bronze medalist in Spain in the decathlon. He was actually, it was anticipated that he would win the gold and overwhelmingly win it with the points. But if you remember, Dave ended up having two broken bones in his right foot at the very beginning of the first event, and he ended up still finishing with the bronze. But he said this, "If you can, you should. If you don't, you didn't." Pretty interesting thought from him. He is right now the athletic director at South Salem High School now. And then the last one that I'd like to share with you also comes from Bob Richards. And this is probably my favorite from him. "The greatest challenge given to man is in just two words, follow me." So let's pray. Lord, as we come before you this morning, we know that we're already well advanced into this day. But we still want to take this moment and say thank you for it. What a beautiful sunrise this morning as I was coming north on the freeway. Thank you for that. And God, we pray for the leadership in this building. We pray for our speaker as well in this building and our other leaders too, God, for our house. We have to lift up to you also our president right now. And we would ask that the values that were established and followed years ago at the foundations of this country, that they would also be exhibited through him, that you would help him with those. Thanks now. In Jesus' name, amen.
Courtesies. We begin with our moment in Oregon history. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This sesquicentennial history minute is from the Oregon Historical Society. It has to do with wolf meetings. As the number of white settlers in the Willamette Valley increased during the 1830s, so too did the recognition that some type of government would have to be formed. For years, attempts to establish a provisional government were thwarted by intense factionalism. In particular, the clash between Methodists, led by Jason Lee, and Catholics, headed by Father Francis Blanchette. Compounding the divide was the powerful regional presence of the Hudson's Bay Company and chief factor, John McLaughlin. The existence of these factions, each of which had its own internal divisions, created an environment in which compromise and agreement were elusive. Apparently, some things never change. My own editor. Of the many meetings that were held to discuss the political status of the region, the Wolf Meetings, as they were called, are considered especially important in establishing a provisional government. Wolf meetings were held in March 1843 to solve the problems of attacks on local livestock by wolves, bears, and cougars, and it was through the establishment of a committee to solve the predator problem that the seeds of an organized government were sown. Less than 2 months later, on May 2, 1843, Willamette Valley settlers met at Shampooey to vote on the formation of a provisional government. The action was approved with a vote of 52-50.
Further courtesies, Representative Thompson.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I'd like to call your attention to the rear gallery today. We have 83 persons from Whitworth Elementary School in Dallas visiting today. I explained to them already that I have this front corner desk because I have a penchant for talking in class. There's always repercussions even later in life for your behavior. Anyway, I would like you to join me in extending courtesies to them for the day.
Further courtesies. Clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Boone is present. Representative Nathanson. Is present. Representative Greenlick. Representative Berger is excused. We have a quorum. Messages from the Governor. Messages from the Senate. First reading, memorials and resolutions.
H.R. 4, urging Governor to withhold development of Oregon National Guard to Iraq or Afghanistan.
Measure read for the first time is passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports, propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2548 relating to speed. House Bill 2549 relating to rural enterprise zone tax exemption prescribing the effective date. House Bill 2550 relating to smoking in taverns and providing for revenue raising requires approval of three-fifths majority. House Bill 2551 relating to optional retirement plan. House Bill 2552 relating to income calculation for Oregon Supplemental Income Program medical assistance. House Bill 2553 related to motor vehicle accidents. House Bill 2554 relating to definition of vulnerable user of public way. House Bill 2555 relating to products of individuals with disabilities and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2556 relating to governor's authority over national Oregon National Guard. House Bill 2557 relating to higher education faculty appropriated money declaring an emergency. House Bill 2558 relating to small schools and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2559 relating to vehicle fuels. House Bill 2560 relating to county clerk re-recording of instruments. House Bill 2561 relating to late application for exemption from property tax and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2562 relating to vehicle size limits and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2563 relating to titles for vehicles. House Bill 2564 relating to motor vehicles. House Bill 2565 relating to expedited titling of vehicles. House Bill 2566 relating to vehicle dealers. House Bill 2567 relating to trip permits. House Bill 2568 relating to motor vehicles. House Bill 2569 relating to registration plates. House Bill 2570 relating to membership of the Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors. House Bill 2571 relating to veterans' educational benefits.
Bills read for the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2357 relating to disclaimers.
Bill read for the second time is passed to the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Excuse me. House Bill 2157 relating to connection to federal tax law and prescribing an effective date.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2157A. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to give the body the background for this bill. It's a bit complex, and it's important that members understand it. I have had some questions this morning that indicate that some members do not understand how the general rule works in this situation. Oregon's basic law is that the legislature cannot refer to an act of Congress or some other body which has not yet occurred. So we can reference a section of somebody else's statutes that are in existence at the time that we write our law, but we can't look to something that hasn't happened yet, with one exception, and that's the exception found in Article 4, Section 32 of our Constitution, which was adopted in 1970. And what that section does, written, of course, in late 1960s legalese, which makes it almost impossible to read, but what it means is that Oregon has the authority to connect to federal laws not yet adopted on the issue of what is income for the purpose of the income tax. So that's what this bill is in reference to. Now, House Bill 2157 ties Oregon and the definition of income and other issues involving our income taxes to December 31, 2008, the last day of last year. Most of the bill covers technical and housekeeping issues that may or may not be of interest to the members. They have very, very little impact on the taxes that people pay, but they do make it simpler in some very unusual situations. The first 10 sections, for example, refer to the PERS, the Public Employee Retirement System statutes. Other sections further on in the bill refer to S corporations, the definition of charities, expense deductions, adjusted gross income for the elderly rental assistance and senior deferral programs, general connections for personal and corporate income and excise taxes, and a reference to unemployment insurance laws. All of these are essentially technical in nature. We have not been able to discover that they have any significant or real impact on Oregon law, but they're housekeeping in that they changed the date of the connection from whatever the earlier date was to the end of last year. One significant change is in Section 22 on the definition of earned income. For the purpose of calculating earned income, because it allows the inclusion of tax-exempt combat pay as earned income based on the federal law that was adopted last year. This will have a very slight negative impact on our revenues because it allows the tax-exempt combat pay to be included in the calculation for the earned income credit. Colleagues, the importance of this bill is found in the sections at the end, which essentially tie the Oregon to the law as it existed on December 31st, 2008, for the purpose of the definition of income. The section that I read to you from the Constitution allows us to act otherwise, but this bill requires that we tie to the definition as of that date. And you may ask why we would do that. And the answer is really quite simple. We are in a significant recessionary situation where our income appears to be in free fall because the economy appears to be in free fall. We need to control our own destiny. The United States government has capacities that we do not have. It has the capacity and maybe even the duty to run a significant deficit in order to stimulate the economy and get things moving again. The state of Oregon does not have that capacity. The speaker does not have in his office a printing press to print money to allow the state to run a deficit. We can't do that. So our job is a different kind of job than the one the federal government has. When we're in situations like this one, our interests diverge. The things the federal government is trying to do and the things we are trying to do are different. Our primary responsibility in terms of dealing with this recession is to do the very best we can to provide the basic public services that we provide through our budget. Let me remind the body that providing those public services itself is stimulative, in effect, and to reduce those public services adds to the problem that the recession brings us. Why now instead of later? There are two basic reasons to do it now rather than later, and I'm going to be blunt and direct. This will help the Ways and Means Committee in its planning for the budget. Our budget is going to be volatile enough as it is without worrying about what Congress may do this month, next month, later in the year, in October, next year, without worrying about that and without reference to that. One of the things we can be sure of, or relatively sure of, is that if Congress makes any changes in the definition of income this year or next year, it will be to narrow and reduce the definition of income in order to stimulate the economy. That's the first reason. The second reason is a historically overbroad interpretation of Measure 25, which means that timing becomes important. It is significant and important to recognize that this bill is not a bill for raising revenue. It is about keeping what we already expect to receive. A vote now, because of the overbroad interpretation of Measure 25 by some, means that it requires a majority vote in this body and a majority vote in the Senate in order to be approved. A vote later, after the federal government has acted to change the definition of income, may require a three-fifths vote because of the customary misinterpretation, as I've described, of Measure 25. That's never been litigated. We don't know exactly what Measure 25 means, but being cautious demands that we deal with this measure now. So it is important that we deal with it now for these two reasons. One, planning for the Ways and Means Committee process, which is going to be difficult enough without worrying about what the federal government might do in the future, and also to deal with this legal anomaly that we face in the Oregon legislature as a result of Measure 25. I wanted to mention a couple of other things, and I'll do it quickly, and perhaps I will close with some more details. But I wanted to say now that Oregon has disconnected from the federal income tax definitions a number of times in our history. It has happened in legislatures controlled by Democrats, in legislatures controlled by Republicans. When it has always happened in connection with a recession, when the federal interest and the state interest have diverged. So it's important to recognize that. We cannot predict what will happen in the future with Congress, what Congress is going to do in an attempt to get the great ship of the United States out of the stormy waters that we find ourselves in. The small ship of the state of Oregon must be prepared to stay out of the way. Mr. Speaker, I urge an aye vote on House Bill 2157.
Further discussion? Representative Wingard.
Question of the carrier, Mr. Speaker.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So let me make sure that I understand this right. If we take the vote today, it only requires a simple majority. But if we wait a few weeks, then it's a tax increase, and it would require a supermajority.
I thank you for the question, Mr. Speaker. I've already described what that does. It is not my position that the bill would at that time be a tax increase. I've already described that there is an issue of what the definition, what the requirements of Measure 25 are, and I've already described those.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I'm confused about the need to rush this legislation through the process. First, there was a late-scheduled Friday afternoon hearing in the Revenue Committee, an additional meeting scheduled for a committee that already meets daily. Then there was a rush to get the bill to the floor on Monday night so it could be third-read as soon as possible. And then today, although we are not normally scheduled to be in session on Wednesdays, the session was called nonetheless, with notice given only via a late-night email on Monday for the sole purpose of this bill. That seems like an awful lot of hassle and scheduling and rescheduling to hear a bill, especially when you consider the following. This bill is a preemptive disconnect against federal tax policy that hasn't yet been written. That's right, this measure disconnects us from federal policy as that policy is being written. Oregon just elected a couple of new members to Congress, and Oregon overwhelmingly voted for President Obama. This nation elected Barack Obama on messages of hope and change. Yet, here we are, less than 1 month after his inauguration, we're talking about pulling the rug out from underneath him as he works on his first major policy initiative, an initiative that President Obama says will provide hope to individual Oregon taxpayers and businesses across the state. This decision to disconnect from federal tax code is hasty, and as a result, is bad policy. In a recent speech about his plan, President Obama said, "We won't just create jobs, we'll also provide help for those who've lost theirs and for states and families who've been hardest hit by this recession. That means bipartisan extensions of unemployment insurance and health care coverage, a $1,000 tax cut for 95% of working families, and assistance to help states avoid harmful budget cuts in essential services like police, fire, education, and health care." Those sound pretty reasonable to me. Shouldn't we wait to see what implications his package has on federal tax code before we jump to disconnect? Don't we owe it to a newly elected president to give him at least the benefit of the doubt? If President Obama can bring an ounce of hope to Oregon's economy through federal tax policy, I want to fully support him in that effort. I urge you to vote no. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move House Bill 2157 be re-referred to the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Bruin moves that House Bill 2157 be re-referred to the Committee on Revenue. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As was previously mentioned, we had an emergency meeting of the House Revenue Committee last Friday to deliberate 2157. We had good testimony, both pro and con, on the bill. What was never truly distilled in my mind was the reason for the early action. The good revenue chair today has enumerated two reasons why we're moving early on this. Neither one of which, however, I think would cause us to send this back to the Revenue Committee for hearing. The bottom line is we don't know what effect, as was previously described, we do not know what effect the federal stimulus bill that is currently being deliberated will have upon Oregon, Oregon businesses, Oregon taxpayers. We don't know. We may know 2 weeks from now. We certainly will know 3 weeks from now. We have some guesstimations, but we don't know for fact. The good Revenue Committee Chair says that we need to give the Ways and Means Committee the full opportunity to have to be in certainty with their budget. Well, I would submit, colleagues, that the Ways and Means Committee at this point is anything but certain about what our budget is going to look like, and in fact will not have any sort of certainty until the very least until they see the March forecast. Disconnecting from the federal stimulus before we even know what the stimulus is will create further uncertainty on the Ways and Means Committee. So I appreciate that answer, if you will. I do not think it's sufficient to keep this from being referred back to the Revenue Committee. Send this back to the Revenue Committee. Give us the 2 weeks or the 2.5 weeks until the federal stimulus package is either passed or not passed, but we know for sure. After that, we'll know exactly what effect that has on Oregon taxpayers and businesses, and then we can make an informed decision, not a pre-decision like we're doing today, but an informed decision about whether we should stay connected or disconnect. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion on this motion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We are prepared...
To the motion.
Yes, to the motion, please. We are prepared to make an informed decision on this bill today. The issue is thoroughly understood. This body in past sessions over the last 30 years has acted on similar bills, and the issue is clear and complete. There is no need for a referral back to the committee. We are in a position where it is not an issue where postponing a few weeks makes a difference. The federal government may act, the Congress may act at any time to change the tax law. 3 weeks from now, a month from now, a year from now, during the time of our biennial budget, and have an effect on our budget. So the timing of the bill, in that sense, makes no difference at all, except that it does remove one of the variables that the Ways and Means Committee needs to consider. I urge that this motion be defeated and that we vote on the bill today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion on the motion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the motion to refer.
To the motion.
Colleagues, we have done this type of thing before, but we've done it with a scalpel. We've done this type of thing before when we knew item by item what we were up to. The reality of what we know today changes drastically when that federal stimulus package comes back. Then we have enough information to make a good financial decision for the taxpayers, for the businesses of Oregon. Today's reality is not the same as when that federal stimulus package is presented to us. So I would urge your aye vote on the motion to re-refer. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Bruhn, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. This vote came out of the Revenue Committee. The vote to refer it to the floor came out of Revenue Committee on a split vote. It's not black and white. Now, the good chair who I respectfully disagree with on this issue correctly notes that federal law changes all the time and can change all the time. That is absolutely true. But I think he would agree with me in suggesting that the stimulus package that we're talking about is historically unprecedented. It's not a willy-nilly change that goes on in any given tax year. It's historic, it's huge, and it needs to be historic and huge because of the unprecedented economic times we're in. So once again, Mr. Speaker, I would urge my colleagues to re-refer this back to the Revenue Committee for full deliberation.
Those of the opinion that House Bill 2157 should be re-referred to the Committee on Revenue will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. The motion, having not received the required majority, is declared failed. We now return back to further discussion on House Bill 2157A. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, small business is the heartbeat of Oregon. The hair salon, the print shop, the cafe, the shoe repair shop, the flower shop, the engraving shop, the cleaners, the plumber. I could go on and on, but I think you have the picture of the people working in those small businesses. The employees they hire, our constituents that frequent those businesses, and the long hours and the risks that they take to provide and make a living for themselves and many others in this state. These businesses are the backbone of our economy. Yesterday, I spoke with three different CPAs about this disconnecting bill and what it means to small business. And they all said, with a grin that I could feel through the phone, increased services to CPAs. The CPA stimulus package. This increased burden is not just on business, but on individuals in the state of Oregon, individual taxpayers, those who are filing individual tax returns as a result of being members of S corporations, limited liability companies, sole proprietorships, partnerships. This is individuals that will be impacted by this total disconnect from the federal tax law. One of the CPA's words were, "One thing I wish Oregon would do is attract more business. One thing I wish Oregon would do is attract more business." Andy said, "A simple tax code is a good reason for business to come here." Today, our tax code, he said, is simpler, not like our neighbors to the north or to the south. Businesses and their CPAs must maneuver through two complicated tax codes, not one. When we disconnect the tax code, businesses must have, in some cases, two separate depreciation schedules. For an example, if the feds allow accelerated depreciation on a building over 15 years, but Oregon keeps a 29 or a 39-year schedule, those two depreciation schedules are kept on the books for those 39 years, separate from the other one that the business has to take care of. These differences are complicated and expensive and last many years. Just last week, our House Judiciary Committee heard testimony from a retired Oregon Department of Revenue auditor on how overworked that department is today. Passing this bill will only make that situation worse. Colleagues, let's not rush through a new tax structure that impacts the citizens of Oregon without first knowing what it will cost our citizens, the constituents that we represent, and the state workers who will deal with this complicated, disconnected tax structure. I urge you to join me in voting no on House Bill 2157.
Further discussion, Representative Reed. To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of House Bill 2157A, and I want to amplify some points that the carrier made. This is not a revenue vote. No one's taxes will be higher after this vote than they are today. It simply protects us as Oregonians from any unintended consequences as a result of federal tax policy. I appreciated the comments of our colleague from Salem, Almsville, and Turner about the desire to bring more business to Oregon, and I agree with that. I would point out that there are already places where we disconnect from federal tax policy in significant ways and with the intended effect of benefiting Oregon business. We all are aware of the business energy tax credit as an example of that. Sometimes our goals match federal intentions and sometimes they don't. It's important to remember that businesses will get any and all federal tax credits to which they're entitled, and that far outweighs the small benefit that we might offer as the state of Oregon. We're simply giving ourselves the flexibility to make tax decisions in our own best interests. And I would reiterate that there are often times when federal aims are different than state aims. This gives us the chance to make our decisions to the benefit of Oregon in our own best judgment. There's something in science known as the precautionary principle, and I think this is a good example of us exercising the precautionary principle in our own long-run best interest. I'd also remind the body that our revenue chair has already committed to a further discussion about ways in which we might reconnect to federal policy at a later time in this session. This makes sense to give ourselves maximum flexibility to remove variables that might result from changes in federal policy, and I would urge your support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Bentz.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, let me begin by urging you to vote no on this bill. There are several reasons, but they boil down to just one, and that is the need to debate these issues. This is an incredibly complex matter that we face. The message that's going to be sent by today's vote is that we are more interested in revenue than in debating and discussing this matter. Now, it's important that when the federal government acts, we be in the very best position to respond and that we not ignore what it does. It is indeed a huge ship. We're a small boat. We're not going to be able to ignore what they do unless we do so by design. I fear that this bill will allow us to avoid those issues and avoid the debate. I think Oregon's going to be best served by preserving our ability to discuss and review these really difficult issues. I urge you to vote no.
Further discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is an important bill that we're hearing today. This is a bill that has to do with employment in Oregon, or maybe importantly, the lack thereof. Last month, the Employment Department reported that Oregonians in the month of December, in the month of only December, lost an additional 9,700 jobs. 9,700. Now that's on top of the 175,000 Oregonians not working today. And that's an increase of 70,000 Oregonians who have lost their jobs in this state in the past year alone. The good representative from Salem, Onsville Turner, talked about some of those mom-and-pop stores. But in key industries around the state of Oregon, in construction, we lost another 2,100 jobs. In manufacturing, we lost another 1,900 jobs. In trade, transportation, and utilities, we lost another 1,900 jobs. And to top that off, we also lost jobs in natural resources, information services, and financial service markets. Colleagues, I mentioned that this is about jobs or the lack thereof. House Bill 2157 certainly adversely impacts those employers. This legislation potentially denies employers the state benefits of our new President Obama's federal stimulus legislation. I share with President Obama's beliefs that we must give industries incentives to purchase equipment, machinery, software, and other goods. It is a proven fact, and it stimulates our economy. These incentives provided to business free up resources that would further enable businesses to hire and retain workers they have, rather than helping business, rather than providing a benefit to help them survive our current recessionary period and give them hope towards succeeding into the future. It's likely today the House passes a piece of legislation that will result in higher taxes and higher operating costs for those very employers that we all depend on and that Oregonians are screaming for hope from. House Bill 2157 will simply do more harm to the economy than the stimulus package we're going to talk about tomorrow can possibly do to correct. Colleagues, I urge your no vote on this bill today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Widener.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Fellow colleagues, is a member who's worked in small business, worked for different plants, and been through layoffs and had to lay people off. This is something that's very devastating to business. when they're not able to make their payroll because they're lacking funds, and we're looking at taking those funds. I urge a no vote today because this is what's going to happen. It's going to increase unemployment in this state. There is no doubt about that. Employers are trying to hold on to the employees they have, and they don't want to let any more go. And as someone who's had to look into someone's eyes and lay them off, I urge you to vote no, and I can't be more sincere than that. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I think we know that Oregon's economy is riding a roller coaster, and when we're riding a roller coaster, we need to get off. This vote is not about taxes. This is about Oregon making a choice that makes sense for Oregonians. We can reconnect in the future to the portions that make sense, but our budget is holding on by a thread, and we need the full picture before we make a decision. Business will still enjoy any benefits they might have under the federal stimulus package under federal law. But the federal stimulus package is by definition about stimulus, and what works for Virginia may not work for Oregon. I urge the body to allow Oregon to be the master of its own destiny, and I urge the body to vote aye on 2157A. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I just wanted to note for the record my personal amusement at the Democrats advocating for local control and the Republicans advocating for President Obama. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The speaker from the member from West Eugene and Junction City took one of my arguments, and I appreciate that. Colleagues, in a recession, clear thinking is critically important. We have no resources to use ineffectively or inefficiently. We must use all of our resources well. How does clear thinking apply to this bill? I think it's very important that we understand what we're talking about. And many of the speeches given this morning have been on the topic of the proposals contained in the current stimulus bill that is before Congress. We don't know whether those particular changes in the federal tax law will be made or not. That's still under discussion in Congress. They may or may not come out of the conference committee, so we simply don't know. But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that in fact something like the things that people are talking about are adopted. I think it's very important that we clearly understand what that means for the state and what it means for the federal government and what it means for local business, because in understanding those things, sorting out this bill becomes much easier. I've already spoken about the federal government's interest and the state government's interest. I supported President Obama in his bid for the presidency. I am very pleased that he won, and I am also very pleased that he has proposed a major stimulus package for the United States that Oregon will benefit from. My bringing this bill to the floor has nothing whatever to do with the fact that I support that. It is instead an attempt to protect Oregon from one of the side effects of that bill. Now let's talk about the effect on business a little bit. When a business is considering purchasing a piece of equipment and putting it into production and taking a depreciation or expensing that equipment if it's a small business and it falls within the limits, it does that in hopes of making a profit. And in doing so, it will get a deferral of the 35% federal income tax on corporations or the income tax deferral that would accrue to an individual proprietor or partnership and so forth in that situation. Oregon, and Oregon's tax rate is very low, 6.6% for corporations, 9% for individuals on the margin. And the difference between the effect of the federal tax break and the added state tax break is small. But when we connect to the federal tax break, we give a break to everybody in that situation, whether they relied on the state tax break or not. That's an inefficient use of funds, of tax funds, especially in a situation in which we don't have enough tax funds to pay for the budget. Now, one of the speakers proposed that the only stimulative effect in the situation is if we give a tax break and the result is some increase in business activity. I've already pointed out that, in fact, the increase in business activity that this would cause is small compared to the tax break provided by the federal government. And let's not make any mistake about it. This bill does not change at all whatever tax break Oregonians might get from the federal government as a result of the stimulus bill or as a result of any other change in federal tax law that may be proposed and adopted by Congress. That will be the law for the federal taxes regardless of what we do. It's important to recognize that we are not changing that at all, nor do we have the power to do that. But it is also important to note that our budget is not money that's buried in the ground. It is money that is spent on wages and benefits. People go to the doctor. People pay their mortgages. People buy groceries. People buy clothing and a variety of other things that they need with the funds that they receive as a result of our budget in operation. That budget is stimulative. It's part of the economy, and it's an important part of the economy. To the extent we cut our budget, we are actually increasing the effect of the current recession. And it's vitally important that, colleagues, we think clearly about this problem, because we are going to face other bills this session addressing exactly this problem. And understanding clearly what the effects are of our action is critically important. To stay with a hypothesized federal tax break has very marginal increased stimulative effect in some portions of the private economy, but takes substantial dollars away from the state budget, which would be stimulative had they been spent in the state budget. And make no mistake about that. This is critically important. This is the first of many bills, colleagues, that we are going to face this year. Tough bills. Bills that many of us, most of us, would probably prefer not to vote on. There will be bills to cut budgets. There may very well be bills to increase revenue. I'm willing to wager that the vast majority of the members of this body would prefer not to have to vote on those bills, but we will have to vote on them. This is the first of them. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill will pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2157A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2202, relating to unemployment insurance hearings.
Question now arises on House Bill 2202. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, House Bill 2202 comes to you from the House Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed unanimously under the direct leadership of Representative from Happy Valley. House Bill 2202 amends the ORS to give any party to an unemployment hearing that failed to attend the hearing the right to request a reopening of that hearing. Additionally, House Bill 2202 will bring Oregon unemployment law into conformity with the U.S. Department of Labor's interpretation of federal law. House Bill 2202 also includes expanding the Employment Department's authority to deliver information to parties involved in hearings from mail to other methods such as email or fax communication. It's important to note also that there is a fiscal impact noticed on there. However, it's a liability that we need to take care of. Without the passage of House Bill 2202, Oregon could be found out of conformity with federal requirements, which could lead to the loss of the Employment Department's $97 million administrative grant. In addition, Oregon employers could lose the discount to their Federal Unemployment Tax rate and be expected to pay an additional $1.04 billion in federal unemployment taxes. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote on House Bill 2202.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, do you wish to close?
I do not. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Witt votes aye. House Bill 2202, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2298, relating to donated leave.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2298. Representative Escoval.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2298 changes the way employees' average salary is calculated for a maximum amount of leave state employees can donate to the employee who is deployed in our armed services. The state's military donation leave plan program allows workers to donate leave into a paid leave pool, which deployed employees can draw funds to supplement their military pay. The maximum amount of which an employee can draw from the pool is based upon the employee's base salary. However, there have been numerous cases which employees whose wages include overtime, which is not included in the calculation in calculating the cap for receiving donated leave. This corrects that and makes this much more fair for not only the employee, but also for our military. House Bill 2298 changes the calculation for a maximum amount of donated leave a member can receive for the program to include an employee's average overtime wage benefits as well as their base. The bill also extends these provisions to local jurisdictions that provide a similar donation leave pool. It also expands the requirement for granting a leave of absence to include being called into service by the Adjutant General. I urge your aye vote not only to support the people of the state of Oregon that have the willingness and the right to support our military.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Escoval, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Jefferson Smith votes Aye. House Bill 2298, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2323, related to property offenses.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2323. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, colleagues. House Bill 2323 increases the property value thresholds. What 2323 basically, it comes to you from the House Judiciary Committee, where it received support from your three retired cops assigned to the committee. The intent of 2323 is pretty simple. It increases the value threshold of property crimes. This bill was sponsored by the Committee on Judiciary at the request of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Yum Hill County District Attorney Brad Berry was speaking on behalf of the DA's Association and also supported this bill. Now, in a nutshell, what this does is, and I'll take just a real quick look for you at what it does as it implies to theft and that portion of the property crimes. You have first, second, and third degree theft, which is your C felony, A misdemeanor, and C misdemeanor. Currently, right now, your first degree theft threshold is at $750. Second degree is between $50 and under $750. And third degree, which is your C misdemeanor, is anything under $50 for value. What this bill would do is increase up to $1,000 for a C felony, for your second degree A misdemeanor would be between $100 and just under $1,000, and then your C misdemeanor, third degree theft, would be anything valued under $100. Now, in 1987, the legislature adjusted the values of theft as well, and also included at that time third degree theft. Before that time period, the state only had two levels of theft, first and second degree. So you had a C felony and an A misdemeanor, for your information. And the top level at that time was $200. So just as I say that and plug this in for you, a portion of this that's being adjusted as well is theft by receiving. Theft by receiving, first and second degree, was introduced back in 1971, and it stayed at that level of $200 threshold until now. And we're adjusting accordingly with that, with where we're wanting to go with House Bill 2323. So that gives you a little bit of history behind it. At this point here, would appreciate your support on this. This truly would help the district attorneys throughout the state in consideration for filing and moving forward with crimes, as we've been looking at so many different things anyways with passage of Measure 57 just a few months back, and appreciate an aye vote from you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes no. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes no. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. House Bill 2323, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2365, related to novelty lighters and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2365. Representative Matthews.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to request unanimous consent that rules be suspended and that I be allowed to use visual aids during this presentation of House Bill 2365.
Representative Matthews requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for purpose of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Quite a collection.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, this bill comes to you from House Committee on Consumer Protection, where it passed unanimously with no fiscal impact under the leadership of our representative from the Emerald Empire. I stand here as a former police officer and a current firefighter in a rather unique position. I'm here to somehow light a fire under each and every legislator seated in this room to move forward on a bill that's going to help us accomplish a very difficult task, and that is to start working towards stopping kids playing with fire. For years, men and women in Oregon's fire service have spent countless hours communicating to the children the very dangers of playing with fire. They coined a phrase that's somewhat of a catchphrase heard throughout the state and throughout the nation, and that is that lighters and matches are tools, not toys. But what happens when manufacturers decide to make those very tools look like toys? Well, folks, I can tell you, here's what happens. Kids are enticed and enamored with fire. This is a toy that was given out by one of our local eatery establishments a few years back, and it serves as a squirt gun. You pop the back fin and water comes out, and it's awfully fun to play with. Unfortunately, imagine what a child would do at age 2, 3, 4, 5 if they found the same character laying around their house. Certainly, you could say that parenting skills are a plus and you need to make sure your kids don't play with fire. But you're not going to always be with them and not always have their eyes on them. And at some point what happens is, as kids will do, they will push and prod and play. And eventually, flame comes out of Nemo's face. Now, folks, if your kid's out finding Nemo, they're going to find more than that. They're going to find some trouble, and they're going to find a problem in playing with fire. In fact, there's others that I will show you, just so that you understand what we're talking about. We're not talking about a simple thing like, oh, a toy, it's fire, kids won't play with it. This is a duck. Simple little duck. Kids play with ducks. Again, fire out the top. Now, keep in mind, if you're around toddlers, which I have 3 children, 8, 5, and 3, my 3-year-old is still one of those that puts things in their mouth. Imagine the dangers of children being burned by these. But think beyond that. Think about what firefighters struggle with each and every day, and that is that when kids play with fire, they don't do so in the presence of adults, and they don't do so in large open spaces. They go into confined spaces, like the child that we actually found out in the Trout Dealer Wood Village area. He and his sister and his mom perished in a fire. He was in the closet in the bedroom playing with matches, with a lighter. What we're asking with this bill, obviously, is to take these off the shelves. Oh, there's more, I see. Even Mitch Greenlick, now he's not a child, but he's still enamored, wondering what's in this basket full of toys. This is nothing more than a little John Deere tractor. Lighters and matches are tools, not toys. Fire out the top. Air guitar. And if you think kids won't play with fire, let me just tell you, and I won't say the name, but when I brought this little basket of goodies, placed it on my desk, and walked away for a moment, there was one particular legislator that found the need to get into this bag and started playing with fire. I won't say the name, but kids will play with fire. Again, fire out the top. These are dangerous, and even these would be construed as novelty lighters. Pardon me? You know what? You have no worry, because I'm a trained professional. I can deal with that. This was confiscated by local law enforcement. This is a pistol, thought to be a real gun, pointed at somebody and flames come out. We know these are dangerous. Cell phones. Kids love to play with cell phones. Again, fire comes out of a cell phone. So we're here to talk a little bit about Umatilla, where records indicate that a home was completely destroyed because a kid was playing with a lighter that resembled a horse, a toy horse. Two other boys burnt their playground structure at their local school, playing with a lighter that looked like a fishing pole. Now, keep in mind, we have a big problem in the Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office. That is that we're trying to reach these juvenile fire starters, get kids to stop playing with fire. This is a start to that. It doesn't solve the entire problem, but it won't entice those kids to get their curiosity sparked, if you will, and grab a lighter and create some havoc. I personally responded to many fires involving kids with matches. I know how dangerous it is, and I know how important it is that educators are out there given the resources necessary and you know as well as I do, those of you that are in the teaching profession, that you perhaps might see this in a backpack and not realize what it even is. You can't confiscate what you don't know to be dangerous. These are dangerous. So House Bill 2365 prohibits the selling and offering for sale and, of course, the distribution of these novelty lighters. It will authorize the Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office to create and maintain identifying lighters and which of those are in classes and types of lighters that become novelty lighters and maintain that database to keep them off the shelves in the state of Oregon. It will also create civil penalties for those people that choose to ignore the law. And those civil penalties will escalate as violations occur. The other thing it does, it will reduce the amount of responses that we go to where children are burned, where their families are destroyed, or their homes are destroyed, where property loss occurs, and even fire deaths happen. So as we sat in committee, and again, unanimous in committee, and quite honestly, there was no organized opposition, but then again, how could there be? As we listened to a lovely little girl who is seated here today, and later we'll recognize, but Tatum Sparks sat there before our committee at 8 years old, and she gave the most poignant testimony about this particular issue. She said that she thinks toy lighters should not be sold at stores because, in her own words, in her own writing, love this little girl, I don't want anybody to get hurt or anyone's house to burn down. It's hard for children to know which are toys and which ones are lighters. Well, we're going to make it easy on them if we can give the state fire marshal what they need, and that is our support and unanimous effort here on House Bill 2365. I encourage an I vote out of this body, and let's get this thing started. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Bruin.
Mr. Speaker, question the carrier.
Question the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Good representative. Did you find those out of Representative Barton's floor desk?
I appreciate that question. Actually, these came from the desk of Judy O'Coolidge, who is the director of the Juvenile Fire Service Program with the Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office. I appreciate the question, though. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I would like to speak to the bill today as a person who has worked with children for most of my life and spent the last 22 years with children from birth to five. One of the values and the most endearing quality of children is their curiosity. And they are so fast, they move so quickly, that no matter sometimes how hard we try to protect them, they manage to find something and get hurt and sometimes get killed. I absolutely cannot believe that we would want anything like this in our house with young children around, because it is so tempting. Obviously, it's tempting for adults. And I just think it's in our best interest, because children cannot speak for themselves always, to protect our children. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, you wish to close.
I do, Mr. Speaker. As you see, these do resemble the toys, and the very toys that our kids are encouraged to play with each and every day, whether they're rubber frogs or, you know, Nemo, even little guitars, whatever they might be. In this particular case, there's a camera. You put a camera up to your eye, but if you did so with this, you'd lose your eyebrows, your hair, or perhaps your life. We're all shaking our heads that we can't believe these are for sale, but they're for sale right now, this very day. You can run to any one of those little, you know, call them what you will, markets, and doggone it, you can buy them right now off the shelf. I'm here today to ask you, and supporting me, supporting Tatum Sparks, and you talk about pressure. We've got a whole third grade class from St. Joseph's that are watching us to do the right thing today, and I would really appreciate your support on this bill. Again, thank you. House Bill 2365, I encourage an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2365, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5543 related to state financial administration and declaring an emergency.
Bill read for the second time is passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, February 5th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats will caucus immediately. Go straight to the caucus room, and we will meet you there. Thanks.
Further announcements, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans, caucus for immediately has been canceled. We will caucus tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., immediately preceding the session.
Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Friday, February 6th is National Wear Red Day. It's a day when Americans nationwide will take women's health to heart by wearing red to show their support for women's heart disease awareness. Join the National Awareness Movement by wearing red on February 6th and encourage your family, friends, and coworkers to do the same. Thank you.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to remind folks that tomorrow is the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance breakfast. Everyone is invited at 7:30 in the morning at 5:30. And I'd also like to encourage the body to encourage Representative Maurer to wear his very famous red pants.
I will not ask if there is objection because I know there will be many objecting to that request. Further announcements, Representative Matthews.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to request unanimous consent to return to courtesies, please.
Representative Matthews requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Seeing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to again thank all my colleagues today on making a monumental effort towards a very serious problem, but I want to extend courtesies to a special group of students that came down to show support for the bill, but also support for their fellow student, and they came from St. Joseph's, which is about, I believe, a block and a half away from the Capitol building. And right there, if you'll just, you little lady, that's Tatum Sparks. She appeared before the committee and testified before this committee, and this class is here to give her our support. So again, thank you very much to St. Joseph's, your staff, and all the students, and thank you for extending your courtesies. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome to your Oregon House of Representatives. Are there any further courtesies? Are there any further announcements? Remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:15 a.m., Thursday, February 5th.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Thursday, February 5th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Thursday, February 5th, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.